You're listening to a Stranger podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, you're listening to Invisible, the Stranger's Conversation with People in Art. I'm at Platform Gallery. I'm Jen Graves. I'm at Platform Gallery with the artist Mark Dombrowski. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
You have just finished installing your show called Neverland. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Neverland. We're also going to talk a little bit about your work in general. You were in Seattle, Tacoma for...
We moved, my wife was here in 2000, I moved in 2001.
Shannon Aikens.
Shannon Aikens, mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's also an artist.
She is. So
you were here for a number of years and then left 2009, right?
Yes.
To go to Las Vegas.
Yes.
And you were teaching at Cornish.
I started teaching Cornish in 2002, yeah.
And now you're at UNLV?
Right.
Okay. So we haven't talked before, you and I, about your work. Kind of sat down and had a real conversation, although I've been looking at it for a while and you've been making it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really glad to get to do this. I want to start out by asking why, a really simple question, but why you work with found objects at all?
It's probably not an easy question in a lot of ways. I think that when I started it, well, I'll backtrack, because before I was making this work, I was making a lot of rubbings of different places where I lived, and studios and apartments and our kitchen and places we would go eat and all these things. And it was like going there and making the rubbings was a way of kind of capturing them and recording them. And I started getting really interested in that idea of like recording and tracing and tracking kind of what I was doing and what I was seeing. And then I was in Florida visiting my dad, and I'd been thinking about picking up stuff and kind of responding to it, but hadn't. And we went grocery shopping at Albertsons, and I found a shopping list in the cart, and took it and held on to it a long time, thinking that if I did one, I would probably want to do a lot. And I did one, and I'm still doing it. And that was 2002. I was there for Christmas.
And when you say doing it, you mean
I so I took. I'd had the idea. I'd started sewing in grad school. Shannon taught me how to sew, it's been a slow process. But I took it and embroidered over all the text, and so that it replicates everything that's underneath the original text.
Mm-hmm. Is there any thought to kind of, rescuing things that are lost or just making important things that are overlooked? Because, a lot of artists work with found materials.
Yeah.
And then some artists mix found and new materials and other, but there always has been this kind of like scavenged quality to what you're working with.
Yeah, the shopping list is probably the most innocuous, and even though it was kind of the easiest place to start, as soon as I started picking up things, it really quickly changed. I mean, all of a sudden, when I adjusted the way I was even walking down the street looking for things.
I was going to ask you, did it change your relationship with the world?
Yeah.
You're kind of in search of anonymous objects.
Yeah, and so much so that, when I walk down the street, look at the street. And, I've written about walking in front of a bus to pick up, paper that I think there might be something on the other side. I've picked up old pizza boxes that have writing on it. It's not, because I'm always kind of curious now. But there's the more things I pick up, responsibility. It's more than recovering them, because I've gotten things that have people's personal information. I've gotten things that I once found a lost letter that a little girl had written to her dad, and made me sad. It was evidently lost, and it wasn't crumbled. I don't think it was thrown away. I think it was just maybe fallen out of someone's pocket, or I'm not sure. But so things like that, the idea of kind of recovering them and giving them. Showing them, representing them, mm-hmm. I guess.
Is there a kind of loosening for you? I mean, there's a lot of anxiety in the translation between emotion and expression, right?
Yes.
And for artists as well as for regular people, right? For everybody. So is there some release or some relief for you in the distance between these being someone else's expressions? Whereas if you made an expression like this, because some of these can seem very overwrought. Even the act of embroidering them,
right.
I think you play with, that edge. Like it can seem kind of like a melodrama.
Right.
How, first of all, how do you think it helps you, you know, keep your distance. And then also, how do you deal with that melodramatic aspect? Do you worry about it?
That's a great question. Oh. That's a great question.
Well, wow, thank you.
I guess taking it apart, the embroidery is a way of, I mean, doing a lot of things with it, because it's essentially like, I'm embroidering into the actual piece of paper that I find. It's not copying it on something
right.
else. So to do that, just logistically, I go through and punch out the paper before I even start sewing. So I've already kind of, there's already this...
You know where the stitch marks are going.
Yeah. And it's already like kind of puncturing it. I mean, there's something, there's like this distancing that's mm-hmm. happening. And then the act of stitching it or sewing it, whatever, is really slow. And a mm-hmm. lot of the things that I've done or pick up are, you know, throw away somebody seeing their pens out of ink, or if it's they're writing a quick note. So there's this distance in velocity or speed with the work that I think helps me kind of stay away from it. Mm-hmm. The in terms of, you know, not being melodramatic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That being said, like, I keep revisiting the content and really kind of paying attention to that again. And some of the pieces that are more difficult, I guess, is it's hard. You know, it becomes kind of personal again. Mm-hmm. So there's this sort of circularity, I think, in going through the process.
How often do you have an image in your mind, considering that we're talking about visual art, you're an image maker, but also all you're doing is going over these words or numbers often? I mean, sometimes there are images in right. what you make, but how often are you kind of also keeping at bay an image that's actually sort of popping up and related to these stories, these, you know, various kind of little throwaway things? Do you have images for them? I'm thinking of like when you read a book.
Same thing happens
with any text, you know, like you sort of start to invent images to go along with them.
I think the installations themselves have really taken on that role for me.
Oh, good.
So
okay.
I see them, I guess, in two ways, like that the different fragments now are starting to get assembled almost like poetry in a way, like, you know, with the spacing of some of the work we'll look at in a minute, but also with the way they lay out spatially in relation to other pieces.
Okay.
I mean, in an environment. Mm-hmm. I think both those things, mm-hmm. that's more of how I'm thinking about the image.
Okay, let's go to Michael Jackson. So we're going to the back of Platform Gallery, where hanging on a hanger is a t-shirt, black t-shirt, that says King of Pop and signed Michael Jackson, has his dates on it. And another crazy thing about this shirt that I noticed is that the tag says SAD Collection, S-A-A-D.
It is sad.
It's very sad. And it's extra large. Like, you can't imagine Michael Jackson himself wearing this shirt. It's
right.
so huge. But what you've done to this shirt, aside from hanging it in this gallery, is really just made it laden with this embroidery. It's like this heavy-duty embroidery over, I'm assuming this is an image of him?
Yeah, this was a white screen print that also had his signature in white and the dates of his birth and death.
Okay, so you've covered all the white in heavy, heavy black.
Right.
On black.
Right.
Because the t-shirt is black.
Right.
Okay, let's talk. What's this? What is the title of this?
This is called Losing the Form in Darkness.
Okay.
Which is taken from a short story by David Wojnarowicz. I'm probably mm-hmm. mispronouncing his name, but
that's how I would say it.
Okay, I can't spell it either. Thinking about the image, though, this was, I guess, kind of a departure in a lot of ways from what I've been doing, in that it's not taking the color of the surface underneath and repeating it,
mm-hmm.
but rather taking the color of the environment and doing something else with it. And, you know, as I wrote about it, my idea was that it would be kind of simultaneously fixing and removing the image and mm-hmm. doing now a couple of things. And I was thinking, I guess, most pressingly about maybe Willem de Kooning's Robert Rauschenberg's Erased de Kooning drawing.
Well, there's also a lot of hiding going on here.
Yeah.
Because there's this black on black. And, you know, I'm wondering, did you find this shirt?
I bought the shirt at a swap meet in Las Vegas.
Okay.
That's also something kind of new. This is, I haven't purchased many things. I purchased some things as a way of kind of more for myself as just kind of preparing or doing studies. And the proliferation of these shirts, though,
How much it cost you?
Good question. I want to say with tax about $12.
$12, I see. And you bought it obviously after he died. Shortly?
Yes.
Shortly?
And now you can't get them, or I don't see them so much anymore.
My goodness.
They kind of appeared and disappeared.
It's the kind of embroidery work that makes me wish I were a fabric specialist or hanging out with one at the moment so I could ask them something, and maybe you are one. But basically, this is so thick. It has that quality of kind of like Baroque or Rococo like fabric where it just seems a little bit to be the product of a crazy person.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There's this kind of like overgrown quality to its thickness.
Yeah.
And it bunches up the rest of the shirt. Like it sort of grabs the rest of the shirt with its stitching.
That's sad. I didn't try to make it do that. It's bad embroidery.
Really? Bad embroidery?
Yeah.
I'm very sorry. My word for bad embroidery is Rococo embroidery.
Yeah, that's good. the patterning, how it's covering stuff is, like I was trying to work with the image, but this is like a satin stitch where the stitches are very close together. Uh-huh. The idea then that it looks like a surface. So it was it's actually kind of a quicker way of covering something.
Can you show me his face real quick?
Yes.
I wish I could show you guys that on the tape, but
we can. His head is kind of tilted back. He's holding a microphone in his hand, singing into it. It was sort of a white shirt with buckles. I'm thinking very bad, Dirty Diana kind of.
Right. Yeah. Oh, he's small.
Through the shirt here. This would be his belt. A lot of it was black.
Part is this
of
his arm?
Yes.
Yeah. You can make out his fingers a little. There's like a Homer Simpson quality to his head.
There's a lot of belts.
Which is hard. Yeah. And there's like,
right.
He's real hard to make out. How about the racial politics of the shirt? How about black on black? How about Glenn Ligon? How about all that? What do you think, white guy? How do you talk about it?
I think in part, I'm going to evade that a little bit. In part, though, it was talking about being crazy. The work for me, because it took, this was maybe 2 months, of just kind of going back to it and walking away from it and wondering if I should even be doing it. But as I kept doing it, I would kind of punch through the silk screen, little bits of white would kind of appear and reappear. And so a lot of the sort of crazy stitching came from just feeling like, well, I wanted there to be closure. I was trying to kind of get over Michael Jackson in my own way.
Aww.
And, I'll talk a little bit about, why this was such a, sort of a pressing part of the show, too, then.
Yeah.
Was that Shannon and I just moved to Las Vegas, and, the kind of day that I started my job there was the day that Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett both died.
Uh-huh.
And I lost the job like that afternoon, and we were, at work. I was fine in the South. They were closing the place where I was working, and,
what was the job?
I was working for a furniture showroom.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, this is what was referred to in your press release.
Yeah.
I was wondering what the job was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yikes.
So it was surprising because we had moved out there kind of at the beginning of the summer, really ahead of schedule for us. And so it was a kind of a risk. We were giving up everything very quickly, and there was just a suddenness to it. And then to be there and then that day, and then to, as we're sitting there and everyone around me too, we're all just kind of trying to contend with Michael Jackson having passed away. And more than all of us kind of lamenting the showroom closing, it was, we were talking about the first time we heard Thriller.
I
was at United States of America, we all stopped speed skating so we could watch Thriller on the big screen. I think that everyone has.
You were where? At United States of America?
United States of America.
Oh, skates.
Yeah.
Where?
Actually, I think it was U.S. Skateland.
Where was this?
That was in Sarasota, Florida.
Nice. And you stopped so you could watch Thriller.
Everyone stopped so we could watch Thriller.
Really?
Yeah.
For the first time?
For the first time.
Had you already heard the song and now you're just getting the visuals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
we went because they were going to be screening the video.
So there are a couple little tiny points of light on the shirt that you were referring to. And you can only see them if you get real close. And once you see them, then there's a kind of a night sky feeling to the whole thing.
Right.
But also that obsessive quality comes back where you see you fighting what's under the thread.
Right.
Well, what, I mean, when you lost the job, was it an emotional job? Were you connected to the job? I mean, what were the circumstances?
Yes, no.
Was it like an economic collapse?
It was.
Loss?
Well, they had decided to close the showroom for, I think, some different reasons. But yes, it was.
Okay.
I think it was just a kind of a change in the market. And I mean, Vegas has changed a lot even since we've been there. So yeah, that was part of it. I don't want to say we were totally invested, but we were invested in that we had moved suddenly. Like we left Tacoma very quickly, and I think it was just, you know, we're living in a casino downtown, and we were just trying to really.
You were living in a casino downtown?
Yeah, that's what everybody does when you move to Vegas.
You do? You do? What?
No, well, we were looking for an apartment.
Okay.
We had kind of gone.
You were like staying at a hotel.
Yeah, we hadn't gone to the Scouts. So
okay.
Right. It was a
wow. Did you win any money?
We don't. So, no, we haven't.
No. So 6 months you've been down there.
Yes.
And this show is kind of a product of those 6 months. And this show is, like you described before we turned on this recorder, a little more curated than other shows, and by that, I take it to mean, it feels to me a little bit more narrative.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit more like the works are really intended to come together. So can we talk about the rest of things in here? In front of the Michael Jackson shirt is an incredibly shiny, lacquered kind of black pedestal on the floor with two embroideries on paper on there, two found papers that you've embroidered over. They say, everything is going to be okay, and learn to fucking park, stupid. And fucking is misspelled. And I should note, there is no comma after park, between park and stupid.
Right.
As well there should be. But the way this is positioned, it's facing the Michael Jackson figure that you've obscured on the shirt.
Yes.
So the handwriting is sort of, you know, positioned so that if Michael Jackson were actually standing in the place where he's hanging, he would be able to read them.
There also happens to be enough room for us, I think, in this
and for
space.
Us in between. What's the link between these two? Is this one work on this black pedestal, and the black pedestal is the work, or just two works of embroidery?
No, I think of actually the entire space for this being.
This
the
is
work.
All one work.
Yeah, in fact. The pedestal.
The t-shirt and the pedestal and the notes.
Right. In fact, the pedestal, I've worked with a good friend who designed and built it and painted it with more layers of automotive paint than.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's cherry.
Right.
Yeah. You can see that you've moved south, more toward California.
We had talked about when I originally kind of proposed it to him and you know to fabricate what we wanted to do for the show. My idea had been that the shirt would be on top of this, almost as like a crypt, or I wasn't exactly sure how that, or as just a way of kind of seeing the shirt as standing over it. The idea to have it up on the wall, I think, kind of changed that, and in part to make it more visible, to make it so you could kind of stand face to face in some ways, but then also, like, as I took it off of there, it seemed like the pedestal and the work that went into it and its relationship to the entire process was a big part of the thing. It wasn't just an experiment. It seemed like still sort of necessary to be in this space. So I spaced it out from the wall with the idea that we would be able to stand between it. Mm-hmm. And the pieces, both those notes I found probably in the last week on the streets in Las Vegas. And they seemed to be kind of a perfect counterpoint in a lot of ways to the entire show, to this work in particular, and the kind of sadness and fatigue and craziness of the shirt. I think there's, I don't want to say lightness to the pieces, but there is in some ways. And a lightness, both in the physicality, I think, as well as, you know, just kind of how they're being paired.
And the color.
And the color.
That really stand out on the background of this pedestal. Are they just laying there, or are they attached?
They are just laying there.
Okay. All right. And they're in the gallery with us, the rest of the stuff. Let's see. You say what it is, what some of it is. You've got.
Okay, so on the, I guess we'll walk around the left.
Wall work and floor work.
Okay. So as we're moving to the right side of the gallery, there is a framed note and embroidery on paper that says water. And it has a line crossed out that says 8:30 on a.m. I'm going to say on.
Looks like on.
And a number, 323-1636 ICT. Right next to it is a this is a shipping blanket that has been patched with do you want me to describe some
This one I'd like to hear.
Okay, so these two again are kind of like
are they together?
A pairing, yeah, just in their separation from everything else.
Do they have a title?
They have different titles. This is called Water.
Okay.
The blanket on the floor is called In Nothing in the Beautiful Room Could I Recognize Myself, which is a line from a Mémé Bersenbrug poem. I probably mispronouncing her name too.
I don't know that one.
She's a poet. She's also married to Richard Tuttle. And I kind of reference that in sort of oblique way. the blanket is something I talked about too, as I was wrote about and describing the show. When I was moving, when we were leaving the showroom, packing up all the furniture and shipping it out, the blanket was kind of packing up some items that Shannon and I were taking, furniture that we had acquired, and we got it back. It was in storage, and we finally moved into our apartment in August and pulled the blanket out. We had two BMX bikes that we love that were made. One was made in Tacoma. That's beautiful. And we put the blanket on the patio to protect the bikes because the sun's just relentless. And within about a month and a half, everywhere that it's on the blanket, probably, I don't know, 60% of it is covered with new fabric. Mm-hmm. Everywhere there's new fabric, and you can kind of see some pieces here, all of the blanket, anywhere that's been exposed to the sun, the material just disintegrated and evaporated and just kind of came off and turned to dust. So that kind of suddenness, that sort of like I'd never seen sun do that, and to something like that seemed, I don't know, this is so the idea then with this was to kind of go back and patch it and really spend time with it and try and restore it, try to kind of recover it in a certain way, and do what I had been doing with the embroidery pieces and kind of take it at a different scale and try the same thing. So it replicates the pattern that was originally on the blanket.
Kind of a wave
spin. Yeah, and I kind of like would stitch it upside down so I could just use this exact wave pattern exactly. Mm-hmm. And as I was doing that, though, sometimes it would get caught in the machine. Sometimes the process of going through the machine would take more off. So I ended up having to go back by hand. And this was, again, kind of side by side with Michael Jackson. I was doing this over and over and over. And the more I would do, the more that would just kind of fall apart. And
how much of your kind of thought process do you consider to be embedded in these works? Because, you know, there is all this repetitive labor.
Yeah. I think that is my thought process.
Is it? So there's not like also a kind of thought process that you see as being parallel to that, but it's like...
No, I think that... how do you mean?
It's kind of a weird question. Like what I guess I mean is you see these as almost like abstractions in that they have this kind of locked in meaning that you've put there that no one else is going to ever
get to.
It's just going to be yours.
Right.
But it sort of runs these wavy lines.
Right.
Which is different from like a kind of geometric abstraction of somebody, you know, a conceptualist or something. I mean, it's a very different idea.
Right. Well, I think it gets back to me with just how of using embroidery for the kind of for the aspects that it already has, like the slowness attached to it, the kind of that it looks like, and it has to be done by hand to make it to have that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that slowness of like the labor of the kind of of everything that means is a big part of what the work is. Like, the process is more kind of crucial to me in all of this than what the actual thing is, which is, I think, why I can work on throwing away sheets of paper or a blanket that's never going to be used to ship anything again.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I just interviewed Mark Newport.
Yeah.
Did I get? Yeah. Who's shown at Greg Cucera this month, and it just strikes me now, it's stupid, I should have realized this before, but and I'm essentially talking to two straight guys who are doing a lot of sewing and knitting. And he talked also about this kind of process, and for him, I think the act of knitting, he sees both in terms of sort of repetitive labor and the slowness that you're talking about, but also in terms of kind of a societal spectacle performance of gender.
Yeah.
Is there any of that for you? Is there any kind of, do you ever do any of this work publicly? Is that important to you at all?
It hasn't been. It hasn't been. And that's a good question, because I think that it's kind of projecting out a little bit that, but a lot of the paperwork that I get now comes from other people. Mm. So it's maybe not the sewing, but people feel like, and I have friends, I have people that I've never met that send me a lot of pieces of paper and things that they pick up because they know about what I do, mm-hmm. and like, or they want to give this a gift, uh-huh. or they just think that I can do something with it,
uh-huh.
and thinking about what that means, like, what am I going to do with it? Like,
yeah, you know, let me ask another question. On this blanket, there are these wavy lines. These wavy lines were originally made by machine.
Yeah.
Totally. There's no narrative behind these wavy lines. On something like, let's go over here. If we look at, let me pick a pretty, a pretty evocative one. I really like this one. So it's a list, and that's the most evocative one, of course.
Yes.
Well, I guess I'll go straight for that one. Okay. All right. It says forest, comma, and then the word as crossed out.
Right.
Then under it says, on 4/20/87, registration and records deleted Brian Williamson's address because he has, and then the words gone the way of all men are crossed out, and the word died replaces them. Signed, Eric, and then more signed to John. So
there's a lot of people involved.
There's
here.
A lot of people involved, including Forrest, Eric, John, Brian Williamson's, and whoever at registration and records, you know, gave out this information.
Right.
Plus which everybody else who's contained in registration and records. And, you know, then the way of all men. So, like, literally everybody. So this is this really evocative thing. This is this really machine-made thing.
Right.
And I'm thinking of, there was a great conversation at Cornish last year that where a couple of conservators got together and they had to, like, kind of embarrassedly admit that they did feel a little bit like when they went over the marks of an old painter to sort of fill them in or overpaint, that they did feel a tiny bit shamanistic, like a slight bit, like they were channeling.
Yeah,
and they didn't like talking about it. They were really uncomfortable, and they were like, no. But even Nick Dorman, who, you know, works at SAM, had to admit, like, well, sometimes I play period music. Like, so, you know, like, so I wanted to ask you, was there any difference in the process for you of going over and over and over these kind of wavy, machine-done, regularized lines versus the story of Forrest and Brian and Eric and John and the Department of Registration and Records?
Yes.
Okay.
All of that.
Okay, done.
maybe not because of the kind of community aspect of it, but in part, I guess with all the work that I do, it's so methodical and that it's kind of, what am I trying to say? Like, it gives me time to really, like, with the notes on the paper, I have to sit and I have to kind of do them by hand, and I can listen to music or whatever, but I can't just absentmindedly do it. It requires a lot of just really slow attention, but I'm holding it in my hand, like, and I'm touching the paper the whole time and, you know, using a needle and kind of going through it. With a blanket, it's, I guess, also like profiling in a certain way, but I've got it on the table, I've got our sewing machine out. It is, I don't know, I don't feel like I'm like working in a blanket making shop, but it's a difference, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, it's different.
I guess this is a straight-ahead way of asking something really kind of silly, but did you think about this mystery for some of the time you were making this? I mean, this mystery of...
Of Brian and...
Brian Williamson, who has been deleted? Deleted? Because... you know, like, where did you find this? What do you want to know about this? Do you not want to know anything? I mean...
I'm pausing because each one is really different, and I think I'm going through my head, like, yeah. Some of them I do really want to know. This one, as I started to kind of go through it, and, you know, it's like I said, I would start at the top and kind of systematically go through each letter and punch out how the pattern I was going to sew. But you can see here, I got to the where they're gone, the way of all men, and really couldn't even punch that out. Like, I... Yeah. It seems like...
You didn't embroider that.
No, and it was almost I kind of wanted to stay away from that. And it was bad enough that even the person writing this, maybe not bad enough, but they had enough concern about it that's inappropriate, it's dated, I'm not sure what was trying to be said there, and then changed it to die. So it's like it takes on this officiousness and it's like this quickness. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I like about this one is it also demonstrates, and I hadn't noticed that you hadn't embroidered that part. I'm really glad you pointed that out. These are drafts in some cases. So you have this weird sense and of the fact that this was going to say one thing, but maybe there is another one out there that's very, very similar, but it doesn't have crossed out, gone the way of all men, you know? It just says died.
Right.
And Forrest, or John, never knew that Eric had this moment of trying to soften the blow about old Brian Williamson, you know?
Right.
We don't have a lot of time left, so I want to ask you to kind of talk about the show as a whole. We haven't talked at all about two cardboard boxes that are toward the front of the gallery. And I should say one of them is kind of a deconstructed box, and the other one is a box with stuff in it. The stuff that's in it, I don't know how do you call that thing? It's one of those hand-held paper, folded paper things where you go...
Right, we've been talking about it, and I grew up, and Shannon is a fortune teller. Right, where it's the paper's folded into, four different sections, which are, again, folded into four different sections, and then hands peeled apart.
You put your fingers in there, and you tell a fortune.
Right, the generation of students I work with now seems to call it cootie catcher, so I'm not
really?
I don't know where that comes from.
I didn't know that. The kids these days. And this one is on the side. It says ornament boxes, and you've embroidered that.
Yes, and then all the text on the cootie catcher has been embroidered.
And is that just the paper airplane?
Is it
embroidered?
No, it's not.
No,
it was found. I found it folded.
You found that?
That. Yeah. We tried to, we were putting this together yesterday and we transported this here, sort of a little bit flattened out. This is more similar to kind of how I found it, this sort of, you know, architectural, it's like mountain range inside there.
Mm-hmm.
Shannon and I kind of played with it, and we think it's just sort of a maniacal folding. Like, in no way does it really come together as a glider or a piece of plan. I'm not really sure what was trying to be done with it.
It's a maniacal folding.
Yeah. The boxes are a little bit different. The first one, the one that's closest, the first one you see when you come in, says for sale.
Right.
And, you know, as the show for me was really referencing this sort of switch to Vegas for us, this is sort of omnipresent now in Las Vegas.
Things that are by the wayside and hoping to get some little money from them.
Yeah, and actually, too, it's... probably cultural or environmental, in that in Las Vegas, a lot of because there's really very little, if any, rain, people will use cardboard boxes to advertise their garage sales, yard sales, anything like that, and leave them on medians on all the streets kind of off the strip. So on any given weekend, you'll drive around and just see hundreds of them. And, you know, talking about recon training, what I look for, and now we go out, and that's what I see. It's like this whole sort of...
Why'd you pick this one?
This one, it was in the abandoned lots right next to our house, and it was kind of pushed up against a fence similar to this. And yeah.
Let's walk back here to get away from the bus noise.
Okay.
Sorry for everyone who's listening. I guess when I look at this show, I sort of consider how you maybe, and maybe this is like a little too much, but I consider how you feel about having moved. And it seems to me that you feel a little uneasy about it.
It's been challenging, but it's really exciting. It's a great opportunity. Shannon started graduate school at UNLV, and it's been amazing. The work that she's doing, and I think the community of artists that we're finding there. I think we're excited about the contribution we can make in Las Vegas, and just being somewhere different and having it kind of reflect and respond to our work. Mm. And I think a lot of the pieces we've talked about here and a lot of the things that I put in, I wouldn't have been comfortable working on a few years ago, or haven't seen them in the same way or seen things change that much, and wanted to really expand what I'm doing, like with the blanket, with the shirt, kind of really work outside of this pretty narrow framework I had been kind of working in for a long time.
Any artists you're looking at now that you're really interested in the last few months, I mean, last 6 months? Who've been ascendant in your brain? Richard Tuttle, I don't know.
Richard Tuttle.
It's probably not new.
That's a tough question.
That's all right. You don't have to answer it. How about on an emotional level? How is it being in a new place? You know, Jan Novak moved from Seattle to L.A. In 2009, and he made an entire show very similar, actually, in story, to this one, where he had a show at Lorimer Project right after moving, and it was about the process of moving. So it was three sound works, one in his apartment before he left, and then one on the way, and then one when he got there. Sound and video.
Right.
And so I'm really interested in this narrative of people leaving Seattle and then having a whole lot to say. I'm not sure what to think about that, but
we're hopeful. We'd like to come back. We love the area.
But how about emotionally? You know, is it a good crucible for you to be going down there? Is it a good crucible for the work to just be kind of, okay, you know, we have this particular story to tell right now?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that in part two, it's this is kind of really candid, but it's one of the first time, I think, for both Shannon and I in our lives where we've felt okay kind of taking the time to really invest in what we do and to not work so much. And, I mean, to not feel like we need to make money. And, I mean, in Seattle I was working all the time. And now I work a few days a week and I work in the studio and really I read more and I think more about what I'm making. I spend more time just looking at things and not making them. And that kind of slowness, is in part... In part, you can't go outside and do anything else when it's 108. So there's those factors, but it's incredible. Really.
It's just less expensive.
It is, yeah. And there's less attention. I mean, there's very, you know, there's not the kind of critical mass.
Yeah.
There's, but there's a group of invested, the people that are there, they want to know. And, you know, we have friends that come over now and want to talk about work critically. And, and we're all sort of going through this and thinking about what it's like there. And it's difficult for everyone. It's difficult to see it for everyone. You know, the unemployment in Las Vegas and Nevada is higher than most places in the country. And things like...
I can't believe you experienced it the very first day.
Right.
Congrats.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for taking all the time to talk about this work. I really appreciate it. And it's here through, do you remember?
Through February 20th.
February 20th.
Yeah.
Okay. We're at Platform Gallery. And thanks to everybody for listening.